truthfully, what happens is, as children grow up, we start to educate them progressively from the waist up. And then we focus on their heads, and slightly to one side.
I think in the old days, you know, you were better off. Because nowadays, they're all specialists. Everyone's becoming better and better, and less and less. And eventually, someone's going to be superb at nothing.
Our education system has mined our minds in the way that we've strip-mined the earth for a particular commodity. And for the future, it won't serve us. We have to rethink the fundamental principles on which we're educating our children.
We're not here to tell everybody that they're wrong and we're right. We're not saying that we have all the answers, but we'd like to present a different way of looking at it.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to China Jedication, episode 19. Will is with me in the studio again today. Will, how you doing?
I am alive. I am sick, but I'm alive.
Yeah, everyone, it's this change of the seasons, isn't it? It seems to just go on and on.
Yeah, and working where we do, we're constantly surrounded and covered by germs from some very small children. So, yes.
It is true what they say. It is a ground of complete loads of sick bacteria and all yeah. kinds of wiggly wormily stuff. When you're a teacher, as I know, if teachers are listening, I'm sure you'd exactly say the same. Maybe summer holidays is when everyone becomes better again.
That's actually summer holidays is when my body goes, oh, you're not working? Cool, let's get really sick. And I'm like, yeah. So summer holidays, give or take.
Well, yeah, because you have hay fever in that, don't you, as well, you get, so...
Yeah, I can control that. It's the bugs that you are constantly exposed to at school that really hammer me.
I was speaking to some of the foreign teachers who have newly come to China, and you know, for them, even though they're not young, coming to a new country for the first time, so far away from home, you are going to naturally pick up things in your immune system that you haven't maybe come across before.
Yeah, I guess that's a good thing. It just depends. Yeah. If you're somebody with a compromised immune system already, like hopefully you know about that and hopefully you've taken precautions, but for most people it's actually a good thing at the end of it because your body's more able to fight back against these things more often than not.
Well, I suppose we're more China jedication than medication.
That's true.
So let's move on. What's been happening on the school calendar apart from getting sick? Oh, we had sports day.
We did have sports day. Yes.
I thought that went terrifically well.
Yeah, it was really
surprisingly.
Good. Yeah. I do miss the individual events. Like, I do enjoy it when the children have like different heats and they find out who's the fastest sprinter or 'cause that's what I enjoy or. I know who's got the highest jump, that sort of stuff. I think that's still fun. Mm. But the way we did it with having you individually are playing for a certain team, that's good as well.
Yeah. Yeah, so they have the four houses where we currently are, the red, the green, the yellow, and the blues. And throughout all the different grades, they fend off against each other, don't they?
Yeah.
Do various events throughout the day. What were you doing? I was doing the 50-meter sprint.
Tug of war.
Okay, tug of war, classic.
Yeah.
Yeah. We did the 50-meter. I had one of those yellow red cards I printed off.
Oh, yeah.
Just to feel like I had a bit of authority, you know. Yeah. if someone had actually, you know, gone off before the other ones twice,
yep.
Then that was two yellows and off you go.
Wow.
And unfortunately, in the very first heat,
yep.
The fastest girl in the yellows.
Right.
Got the red card. She was mortified for 5 minutes. but I said to her, that's probably why you're the fastest all the time, because you seem to leave before everybody else on the track.
There you go.
But all fun, and we all made up, and it is just a bit of fun. Some would say, of course, Will, that, like, we're going to talk about Mitra again today, Dr. Mitra, that what he's saying really gets rid of the whole idea of exams and this kind of competition that seems to be driving all over our world at the moment when kids are small. You know, they don't seem to play anymore. They go to, like, athletics competitions,
right.
And they do that competition and this. Yeah. So could you envisage, I was just thinking as I was lying in the bath, sorry to give you that image last night, of a sports day where no one wins. They just play sport.
Well, then we're getting into a whole different kettle of worms about finite and infinite games, but we can save that for another podcast.
Well, does every game have to have an ending? Does it have to have an? I mean, when they say, oh, "What's the score?"
Right?
Does it have to matter? Infinite time. I mean, okay, 10 minutes. You play. You get to the end. Did
it's
you have
not
fun?
Necessarily time. It's also end states. So, say off the top of my head, you can compare the game of chess, where there is an end state. You both agree on the rules, and the game is over when somebody wins.
Of course, not in the recent chess championships. You've been hearing about the Norwegian guy and American guy. They drew 12 times in a row.
Oh, well.
It was massive. It's never happened before.
Right.
And finally, the Norwegian guy, who is huge in Norway, apparently, everyone watches it on TV, finally beat the American-Italian.
Right.
And apparently, it's just like snowball chess, you know, in terms of marketing, it's gone huge now.
Oh, that's great.
Which is great. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I see what you're saying. There's an end state.
Yeah, so even a drawn game is still an accepted end state for the game of chess. Mm. Or you could talk about something like, you could say chess, the game in general, not a singular game of chess, but all the games of chess, we all agree that we should just keep playing chess. We shouldn't at some point say, you are the last winner of chess, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the difference between a finite and an infinite game just in that regard. But as far as athletics go, so you could say a game like, I don't know, keep the ball up in the air is a non-finite game. Mm. The whole point of the game is to have fun. Mm. Like, you don't stop playing when the ball hits the ground. You start again. You keep playing. So there's no winner there. So that's great, but... Then we come down to things like, you know...
Well, 50-meter sprint.
Right, okay, cool.
I mean, run. Kids love to run.
Yes.
Get to the end. Done. Next. Why do we have to install this kind of, oh, you're the fastest, the best.
Right.
And you're the slowest, the worst. The reason I brought this up, because this definitely wasn't planned, and researchers are telling me to hurry the hell up, is that after yesterday's sports day, it was yesterday, wasn't it? Yeah. There was a medal handing out ceremony, wasn't there? Which we didn't know about.
Right.
But then there are a lot of things we don't know about here due to the way the communication works. There were three listeners. There were, as I said, there were four colours, four houses, but only three types of medals: silver, gold, silver, and bronze. Right. And we, as the foreign teachers, had to hand these medals out. And of course, the red team, that were fourth, didn't get anything. And I suppose it wasn't that surprising, but it was pretty. It was saddening to see the Reds all lined up in different grades after that, looking somewhat, a little bit, I'd say, demoralised, I have to say. They were crying and snivelling and, you know, their kind of eyes were down. And you just kind of think, was that really necessary after such a fun day?
Right. I think that the handing out of medals is... We can talk about that later for something else. But for this one, it was when, really, it comes back to the finite, infinite games. Like, so it brings back this idea of a finite game into the whole thing where people didn't realize they were playing it, and that feels unfair. Mm. So it wasn't, the whole sports day wasn't about to see which kids are better than the other ones. It was more about playing games to the best of your ability, you know, pushing yourself, but, you know, hopefully your team can win, but not necessarily win something. Like, there doesn't need to be ground gained in any certain direction. There's no prize to take home. But by handing out a medal, it sort of took away all the funness of it. Mm. And you suddenly realize, oh, I was playing for a prize. And if you're the red team, you didn't get anything.
Yeah.
So I think that's when one set of rules are assumed and another one is put on top of that, it just messes everything
up. Yeah, it didn't go, did it? It was almost like putting gravy on trifle, mistaking it for something else.
Yeah.
Meat, just completely
not
ruin
meat
it.
Trifle, though. So.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Right, well, anyway, Christmas is coming and I'm thinking about trifle. right, well, let's move on to, it's called the Fact of the Week, Riddle of the Day thingy. Yeah.
May the smile be with you.
Thank you.
Okay, Bozo. Oh, did I just call you Bozo? That's terribly rude of me. I have to take
that
out.
It's my red nose. I look like a clown.
You did. Listeners, obviously you can't see us in the podcast room, but Will is looking rather somewhat red today because William didn't put any sun cream on yesterday and we were out in the blazing subtropical Chinese heat, and he wonders why he is lighting up our studio. Why didn't you put... Oh, you blamed it on your wife, didn't you?
No. Yeah. No, that was just fun. No. Right. Watching her react to that. No.
You thought your hat would have done the job, yeah?
I thought my hat would do a larger job than it did. It did not. Yeah,
you need one of those... You know, one of those the Chinese were wearing, the Chinese teachers were wearing those big caps. And I mean, they are big caps,
I need to just, you know... what's it? Oh, sombrero. Like I just need a sombrero. It'll be fine.
It's like a longitudinal sombrero, though. It doesn't go all the way the around. Visor? It's just that front one that you put up. You could almost dig mud with it.
Yes. A trenching tool.
A trenching tool, yeah. For when things get really tough. Okay, well, here we go. Here's fact of the week. Last time was about elastic bands. This is another completely interesting one. Wearing headphones for just an hour... You wear headphones sometimes. I've seen you in the office wearing headphones. Wearing headphones for just an hour could increase the bacteria in your ear by 700 times. Wearing headphones for just an hour could increase the bacteria in your ear by 700 times. So, whoa.
Okay. In-ear headphones or the studio style ones?
Well, I would suggest headphones would mean...
Just in general?
Just generally, just put over your ears. Okay. I mean, bacteria do move, I guess, don't they? But that might be where you're getting your
could be
your problems from.
Could be, yeah. Being sick, bacteria breed, and then comes back. Yeah, that makes sense.
Ears, big holes in the body.
Yeah,
I never knew that.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. They do drain into your throat, which is kind of creepy, right? Like your ears are actually there's a hole between your ears and your throat. That's weird.
Yeah, that's kind of creepy. And they say, don't they, keyboards carry so much.
I would assume so.
Stuff. Yeah. And we're touching them all the time. Door handles. Touching our noses, door handles.
Touching his nose, yeah.
Yes, I say touching my nose. But yeah, so anyone out there who's a bit sick, maybe, you might want to think about that. Put your headphones down. What can you use instead? This is the thing, if it's a noisy classroom.
Yeah, I guess you could swab your headphones with like a tea tree oil, as long as it didn't.
Oh, I like it. Or plastic kind of like, you know the things you put shower caps over your head?
Yeah.
You could put them over your ears.
Yeah.
And kind of cover it up that way.
Yeah, I'll make you some. You first.
I'd like you to model them, actually. wonderful. Okay, so that's that. Interesting. Now we've got a riddle of the day for you, which you didn't get right last time.
No.
Here we go. How can a man or a woman go 8 days without sleep? How can a man or a woman go 8 days without sleep? It's a bit of a strange one, isn't it? What comes to mind there, Will?
8 days without sleep.
Why not 7 or 6 or 5 or 4? You go 8 days without sleep?
No. I think it's very, there are very few hours that you can...
A couple of days,
very few days,
really?
Yeah, it's only a couple of days before you go nutty.
Well, anyway, you can jot down your thoughts.
Yeah. I have an assumption that it's something to do with the actual days, the time there, so I'll keep my...
Okay.
Keep my... Brain
no specification on time. So how can a man or a woman go 8 days without sleep? That's groundbreaking stuff, this, isn't it? Right, let's move on then to the main content of the week, which I guess, well, we should really talk about gate crashing Dr. Mitra's visit to Dulwich International High School.
Yeah, we kind of did, didn't we?
We did. So he came in, we talked about this, and he came in on a Friday.
Yes.
Dr. Mitra, everyone, if you didn't listen to the last episode, a renowned professor of education who actually had no education, he was saying in the talk.
Wow.
Has come up with this groundbreaking thing called SOLES, S-O-L-E-S, Self-Organizing Learning Environments. And he was installing one of them into Dulwich. Check him out on YouTube or all of those, just... type in Dr. Mitra, M-I-T-R-A, Souls, and he's done some TED Talks, hasn't he, Will? Really great stuff. And I think best thing is, because I got into the morning bit, didn't I? Because you were teaching, unfortunately. You couldn't get out.
No.
So I squirmed in rather easily, I have to say. No trouble caused. And, he did a talk for about an hour. I had to then come back over here to do some lessons, but I went back over with you, of course, after lunch to do the actual opening ceremony of their soul room, which was very, very nice. We can talk a bit about that.
Yeah.
You know, I did record the audio. So here for you and the listeners is a few clippets, yeah, of Dr. Mitra speaking to us in Dulwich. Apologies, by the way, for the poor sound quality. We couldn't get so close.
So Mitra asked me, so what does all this mean? What does it mean for us? Are you saying that we're not required? Well, I hope you didn't get that impression. You are required. You are required to do the hardest job you've ever done in your life, is to convert what you are going to teach into a single question which you leave there. And then you're going to let the children go into the internet, into the wild, so to speak. And you're not going to interfere with what, with where they're going and how they're going. So what is that role? Well, I have a one-liner for it. It's this. You go there, I'll go with you. You're not a guide, you're not a supervisor, none of those. You're their friend. They're going to go somewhere really difficult, and you're going to go with them. So this is it. 20 years of work produced three graphs. The first one on the bottom left-hand corner, you don't have to teach children how to use a device. You all know that. Just give them the device. Don't give them an instruction manual. Don't teach them anything. Don't ask the salespeople to come and explain things to them. Just give them. The one in the center, expect to see rapid improvement in internet searching skills. If they are in heterogeneous groups, public computers. I can't say that again, I mean, any more than I'm doing. Don't leave children alone with the internet. That's not good. But you'll see internet searching skills go up if they're in groups discussing with each other. And finally, improvement in reading comprehension. I'm actually changing that word. I don't think it's reading comprehension anymore. It's comprehension, because they also look at media. They look at YouTube videos, etc. Yesterday in the Dalit Suzu school, I'd set a question for children. I think they were 12 or something. And there were three little girls, and I was watching what they're doing. So the first thing they did was they didn't go to Google. They went to YouTube. Brought up a video. A man appeared speaking about something. The little girls watched for about 5 seconds. And one of them said to the other, "Rubbish." Do an exam, but give them their phones back. You know, why taking the phones away? You solve every problem on the planet using your phone, but when it comes to your child, you take away the phone and say, "Now do it by yourself." It's like asking me to take off my glasses and read, and then come to the conclusion I can't read English. Look at the way the Victorians did it, from whose system we derive ours. Do you remember in school we used to have a little box called the geometry box, a ruler, a compass, a set square, a protractor, logarithm tables. It was all the technology they had. That was what they used to build those great bridges. And they gave it to the children during the exam and said, "Now solve the problem." I don't know where we went wrong. And we took away their devices and said, "No, up to the set square is all right, but no more." That's ridiculous. So give them their phones back and see if you can make a test that their phones will not help them to answer. So I think I conclude with a few sort of prescriptive things about what we could do as a school. Immediate. Introduce the internet as a subject. What is it? How does it work? Who owns it? Who makes money from it? How? What harm can it do? What good does it do? How do you know what it says is right? Is it alive? Is it conscious? That great big network. Children can learn about the internet using only one method. the internet itself. So give them the internet and ask them to tell you how it all works. Another subject, the new physics of our age, is a subject that I've been pushing now for the last couple of years. It's called complex dynamical systems. It's a let me explain it to you. Well, there's an experiment. I won't do that with you, but just ask you to imagine it. You know, if I were to ask you to clap synchronously and not direct the process, if I were to just say, okay, go ahead, clap synchronously, you'll find that you start clapping randomly and then all the claps will come together. How does that work? You won't believe this. Mathematicians have been trying to solve that for 300 years unsuccessfully. How do the claps come together? It's a complex dynamical system. Your clap affects everybody else's clapping. Everybody else's clapping affects your clapping. A complex dynamical system. That is the new physics. That's the world your children are going to grow up in. It's got to come into school from now.
Quickly, I have three sons. The oldest one is six. Fortunately or unfortunately, when he was four, Father Christmas gave him an iPad. Right. It's become probably one of his best friends, which is a real challenge as a parent, especially in the house. In your 20 years of doing your research, YouTube videos have become really, really popular. Whenever my son is on the iPad, inevitably, he'll be watching a YouTube video of something that I will monitor. I want to know, in your studies, when kids go into the classroom and they do this stuff, do they inevitably go into video, watching video? And is it always generally on YouTube?
I don't have the numbers to support this, but observationally, you're absolutely right. It switched from Google to YouTube about 3 years ago. I noticed that children began their search on YouTube rather than searching on Google. Presumably because they don't have to read, they have to listen. And somebody is telling them. Now, is that good or bad? Well, I actually am ambivalent about that. Because you know, as human beings, we do like verbal instruction. We often ask each other things rather than we don't say, can you write down the answer and give it to me, I'll read it. We ask. So I would say let them. But the only comment I would make is that the screen is small, the iPad screen.
Mm.
So I don't know how you would monitor what's going on.
Mm.
Imagine for a second if the internet had the same position or the same status in your living room as the television does. Next to the television is an equally big screen. That's the wide open internet. And you tell your children to do whatever you want on that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why the internet shrunk to that little device. This is one of the marketing reasons. It never happened to TV. TVs never became tiny and in your pocket and that sort of thing. So we're not half as worried about television as we are about the internet. It's worth a shot trying that, you know. I mean, you get those smart TVs and so on. So if you were to say, go ahead and use it on the big screen, then it's a lot easier to monitor what's going on. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, of course, with children is if you can get his friends along on a Sunday morning or something, get three or four of them together, big screen, and watch the difference.
Thank you. So, Will and listeners, there you go. Quite a few tidbits there from Dr. Mitra. It really was a great talk. There's a lot of fun bits in there too. I hope the audio wasn't too bad. So, well, what are you thinking, Will?
I was wondering, does he have a roadmap? Did he mention any sort of what's next in regards to self-organized learning?
Yeah, good question. I thought you were asking about an actual roadmap then. I think he came over from Hong Kong and I think he was shown the way pretty much. So he got there well, so he must have had some type of working map.
Yeah.
So he's been doing this 20-year study, which has come from that first hole in the wall he put in the slums of India.
Sure.
Noticed that kids were learning by themselves, which is really that I think in a sentence, kids can learn by themselves. He's got 20 years of data. He's now living in Newcastle. He's studying, he's doing his research in Gateshead, which is next to Newcastle.
Okay.
So he's trying to put a scientific coat over it.
Right.
And, you know, the talk was very much, he came out with three graphs at the end, showing the changes in literacy or ability to absorb the information they were learning through the use of a soul.
Okay.
And of course, it just looked like your normal, it just went up nicely in a linear fashion type thing. So it clearly does seem to be working. Now, roadmap-wise, where it's going, I guess, and with him being in Dulwich, it really is about proliferating more souls around the world.
Right.
To do more of this research, to really see what's happening. Because one of the main things that came out of his talk was they don't know what's happening.
Right, yeah, yeah. Well, that's a valid scientific place to be at, you know, to admit, well, this is a great idea. It seems to be working. We don't know where we are, though, and what's actually happening.
I mean, on that note, what is happening? Clearly, in a general sense, the kids are learning by themselves.
Sure.
Now, okay, so everyone can say that, but what I'm saying they don't understand is the actual science behind it.
Okay.
Maybe it's beyond science, quite frankly, that ability to just connect into something, and like a hive mind in a way. The kids are there all together. It's about four or five children around a computer, and they're set a question, an open-ended question, and they then have to take time, work with themselves on the internet to absorb information and relay it back to the teacher afterwards.
Well, if we think about it, I don't think it's beyond science. I think it's probably a lot more mundane than that. It's the fact that we've only been teaching children in this manner since, what, like the 1800s or just slightly before that. Like, we haven't had these organized classrooms filled with kids, you know, until the Industrial Revolution. That was the whole point of it, was to create workers for your workforce and your army, and then your country gets bigger faster.
Yeah.
But before that, we had more blended classrooms where there were older kids and younger kids working together on problems together. They were in charge of not only, you know, learning by themselves for the day, perhaps there was one teacher, but most of the time there was a group of kids of different ages. They had to feed each other. They had to look after each other. They had to share what they'd learned.
Mm.
Before that, if we go back to craftsmen and tradesmen, you would have a master who would have mastered his skill or her skill in some places as well. So, and then they bring in these apprentices who go up and they become journeymen, and then they can go out and do work on behalf of the master. Then they just continue learning in that way. But they teach. It's one or two masters in a guild or in a, you know, shop, but they're teaching other people and other apprentices, and it's working its way back down.
Mm.
Going back even further, if you think about it, people have been, what, sitting around like a fire or sitting in a shelter somewhere, relaying stories, having verbal, like a verbal history that they have to remember, and they have to tell these stories back and forth time and again. And it's just, it's more natural for us to talk together and learn through a conversation or learn through actually doing something like a craftsman than it is to sit in a classroom and have somebody talk at you and then you're just supposed to soak it in like a sponge.
Yes, indeed. And the thing is, we're now in the information age, you could say, right?
Right.
So we have so much around us at our fingertips. And in a way, I think, like he was saying, we don't need to know everything now.
Of course not.
But as a skill, like going back to what you were saying about people who would have maybe a stonemasonry skill or another type of specific skill, one of the huge skills today I think our kids need to have is that skill to be able to sift through all of this information and to come up with some kind of conclusion that can still very much change.
Yes.
And so I think this is what this soul thing really kind of does. I'll give you an example of a question he said. And he said very much that he was focusing on the younger ages, like kind of 6, 7, 8, 9.
Right.
But he's also finding it is working with older ones too, like in Dulwich, the teenagers.
Yeah.
So, but you've got to find, it's all about apparently that teacher finding the right question that intrigues, okay, that's wrapped around the curriculum and the objectives of what they're learning in that particular unit, for example,
okay,
to really work and tick those boxes.
Yep.
So he's saying, you know, people say that these souls are going to get rid of teachers. That's exactly not true. He's actually saying it's going to make it more difficult for teachers because they got to find that big question. So one of the questions was, why do our toenails and our nails grow, but then they stop growing? It gets to a point where they stop growing.
Yeah.
Why? What's behind that? So that would be a type of a question, I guess, that would be fused into cell division, right, into a life science type of class. Sure, yeah. And off they go, blum, 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 and they put it together. So going back to what you were saying, Will, Dulwich now has got this soul room, and it's literally, I mean, you saw it. It's a bit like an apple. Like, I kind of got that kind of slick.
Yeah.
But it's got, it's not your normal tables and chairs. It's stand up kind of that, what is it? Would you call it like a bar?
Yeah, there were different services for working at or around.
Yeah, tables and maybe soft cushions and stuff as well. And then there was, I think, four or five screens. And what was very important, and he made this very, very obvious, was that in every soul, the teacher should have the ability to see the screens from where the teacher is at the back of the class.
Got it. Okay.
And so, you know, because people say, well, you let kids on the internet, they can go anywhere. You set a physics question and suddenly they're looking at a naked lady or something, you know, coming out of a swimming pool.
Right, yeah.
So that can be completely stopped. So never would a soul be in a room with children on their own.
Okay.
He said that's where it goes. That's where it can be dangerous.
Okay.
It has to be it has to be seen by a teacher.
Sure.
And when you went into that soul room in Dulwich, it had, what I loved also, it had that kind of the whiteboard, the green board that was all along the walls.
Oh, yeah.
So they're on the screen, they can just jot down
even
stuff
the
at the market. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was really nice. So it's wonderful, really. I'm jealous that we don't have one in our school.
Yeah. My question about a roadmap at the start was really thinking about what's next. Because, you know, a soul's room in a class, in a entire school is nice, but what's after that? Are we going to have schools, soul's schools, where we're basically just, as we were talking last week, are we going to have the ability to set a question for the students that have come to see us about a certain subject, and we guide them down the right road? Instead of having an entire class just go into the souls room, okay, switch off that, and then we'll go back to regular school. Like, where is that?
Well, I think there's a couple of things here I think I'd like to bring up. One is there has to be an integration point.
Right.
You can't just... Well, first, I think people need to see more evidence about this learning. But the problem is how we view the way it's working is based on what we use now, which, of course, all goes back to examinations. So, and that's the huge problem, I think. He rightfully said in front of us in that talk, he doesn't believe in exams and they need to go.
Yeah.
But I think he's also fighting against a huge wave that just cannot be fought against at the moment. It brings an image to mind of his PPT he was using. It says, learning needs to change. Very much so, from just in case to just in time.
Yep.
And he brought up his example of what's the point really in learning about how a steam engine works? And most of us have done that.
Yes.
You know, all of us could talk about pistons and combustion and putting coal into the oven. And you can talk about that, but no one drives steam trains anymore.
Right.
But you can then ask to somebody, how did you just send that text message to me on my phone?
Right,
and you wouldn't have a single clue.
Yeah.
You go, well, it just happened. It's 3G or 4G. Those are the things he's saying we should be working with now and discovering.
Yeah.
So that's one bit. So it's rather archaic ness to this point, as well as maybe exams.
Yeah.
And he then showed a picture of like an office in the 1920s, black and white picture, and clerks were sitting at desks, individual desks, writing and looking at papers, exactly like, and then he put it next to an exam, like in our school where they're all on their single desks. And he says that points to that, like you said earlier, that's what we were for our workforce. But then he showed the next slide, which was an office, normal office with you on the computer, maybe someone, a colleague from your department, kind of standing over you, and another one watching there, and you're talking about something now that's happening. Maybe the big boss has said, hey, something's happened on the environment. This has changed this price. We need to do something about it.
Sure.
And he linked it right to the exact same picture of a soul, of kids around a soul, a computer. So he's saying we need to update our system.
Yeah, there's a lot of baggage in there.
A lot of baggage. Yeah. You kind of ask yourself, so why is it still, you know, what's the force behind this?
That sounds like a good podcast topic for another day, but we could hint at it. I mean, a lot of people are starting to realize, hopefully, that universities are not institutions of learning, they're businesses.
Mm.
There is a reason why they have brands. That's the, you know, Yale is just as good as pretty much any other university. They have some topics that are discussed or research there that are, you know, world class, but the reason that they've been selected to study those is because they have the brand name of Yale, and somebody wants to have Yale on the top of their, you know, on the top of their report. So that it's because the status quo of universities and examinations and things like that just want to keep it that way. It's what they know. It's the business model that works for them now. And changing that, it's just fear. It's just a real fear of what does that mean for me? When really, that's the most selfish thing that I think they could ask.
Well, and then taking it one step further, would you say businesses as a whole, in a way, control the world? Because businesses put people into power who we believe help to change our world, these politicians and the presidents and all these kind of folk. Playing their certain scene at this current time in the world. But it is all fueled by business, in my opinion. And like you said, it's linked down to university. And business thrives on nothing more than profit and gain and making more and more money, generally, in most of these companies, these big industries.
Yeah.
And so bringing that down to kids are doing soul stuff and using their imagination and creativity to... Well, to not pass exams, but to actually just learn, absorb in their own special way, because kids do. We're not all the same. We're not. That's why not every kid does good in an exam. And fundamentally becomes a free, loving, creative human being.
Yeah.
And that is not what school, in my opinion. I don't want to be negative. I know I'm slashing down stuff here, but... it certainly is a podcast for another time, I think, Will.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's, I think we have to draw the line between commerce and like outdated or poor business practices. Cause I mean, you could argue that somebody like Trump is a very good businessman, but it depends on how you define businessman. Because you can see that his business practices are totally exploitative, but you know, he might be good at certain things. He gets stuff done, but it's that top-down view of he's the boss and now he's going to do this, that, and the other. Or you could look at something like, you know, like a mom-and-pop business who have managed to weather the storm of a large brand company coming into their area, and people still go and visit them. So there's an area, our friend, Mark? The Canadian guy from Kitchener-Waterloo.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we did the podcast with him. Right. Yeah.
So there's this fascinating fact. Like, Target chose KW, Kitchener-Waterloo in Canada, for to try their first Target stores. And Target as a company is okay. I guess they're good for they're good to their employees. But Target as a entity in the world of commerce, they're stomping all over mom and pop stores.
Yeah.
The funny thing is that people shunned it. They just kept on going to their friends who work down the road, you know, at a store that sells things that might be slightly more expensive than the Target, or maybe it takes longer to get to you, but they prefer to go to the people that they know and support that. And Target had to pack up and close its doors.
So what you're suggesting, Will, is that people have power.
Yeah, of course they do.
We
have to stop ceding that power to larger companies and corporations and then putting the blame on them when really it's us.
Could we also say, though, school should school be a business? I know everything kind of has to operate at the moment. You know, you pay to go to a school. Well, the school that we're in, of course. Right. Government school's a bit different. It comes through tax and things like this. But should school be a business? Essentially, philosophically, it shouldn't.
I think you need to define business more. You need to have a sharper definition on what business is. I mean, you could say that you're in business if you're, you know, if your actual profit is a dollar. You know, all your revenue has gone out somewhere else. You've paid all your teachers. Your bills are paid. You've got enough money to build and repair. Why do we need to have, like, if my wage is being paid and the principal's wage is being paid, over and above saving for something like school repairs or updating classrooms, why is there extra profit being generated on top of that? Mm. Because that's the wrong type of business. That business is not focused on the students. That's focused on making a better dollar for the people, like the, I guess it would be shareholders in regards to this school. And we know that most universities have that sort of thing too. So if we define it like that, if the business of schools was to create well-rounded, educated young people, then I think that we needn't make a profit on top of that at the expense of those young people. You can still make it a business, but it just depends on what your focus, the business focus is.
Well, and going back to what we said earlier, I think a large focus of schools, and this is the problem with this catalytic thing that Seoul is I think trying to say in terms of how kids learn and they become educated, is that most schools are focused on numbers, whether it be profit or whether it be exam scores.
Right.
They're not focused on the individual kid.
Yep.
And I think that's terrible.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Pulling back on that, Will, initiating change. Dr. Mitra was saying, exactly like you, what is the roadmap? Where do we go from here? Here's a couple of things that he said. One is we need to introduce the internet as a formal subject in school.
Brilliant.
Great idea.
Yep.
And we're all going to be using it. We all are using it.
Yeah.
Our kids don't seem to use it, but we've... Anyway, we don't have a formal computer technology.
Not in the school,
Introduce complex dynamical systems as a subject. That, I think, is another... Again, you know, dynamical systems. When you're asking a question like toenails, and are they growing, why they stop, you are going into different systems. Yep. You're not just in life science.
There's not one answer.
There's not one answer. And it's complex, and that's exactly what us human beings are.
Yep.
What else did it say? He actually says divide existing curriculums into three parts. Things that are, number one would be stuff that's necessary for life.
Right.
Stuff that's good to know. Okay. Might not be necessary, but good to know that maybe Jupiter has X amount of moons.
Yeah.
You don't need to know it, but
or
it might
like
be interesting.
How the power works or a fuse box works.
Yes,
like
indeed. And the other one would be only for exams. So that's currently where he's thinking in terms of roadmaps there. And he also says this, what do you think about this, Will? Allow the use of the internet for examinations. Which blows it out of the water again in exactly what is an exam now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Let's do a whole podcast on that one. Because, wow, we could just spend hours on that.
Yeah, wonderful. I'm glad you put it down there because we get a knock on the door here. We're going to go back over this again for sure, Will, because it really is wonderful. And it's not going away any soon. This stuff is, it's creeping through the old archaic systems of education, and it's going to keep coming through now in our lifetimes. Yeah. That's for sure, yeah?
Yes.
And it's a wonderful thing. How long it'll take, I do not know. But souls and that kind of way of learning, for me, is a huge way forward into actually naturally how human beings learn.
Yeah.
And we should be doing... what nature kind of does, right?
Probably,
it is what we are.
Yeah.
Probably a good idea. Okay, back in then for... this is yours, Will. No, it's mine. No, it's yours. Word of the week. On the sounds and the words of yesterday. It's mine.
It is yours.
Right, okay, quickly, because I know we're over time. This comes from... I couldn't think of a word of the week, actually, Will. And then my son came up with one a few days ago.
Okay.
And I actually asked him, what's your word of the week, Zach? And he said, ignoranus. which is a 6-year-old grade one son. I asked him, obviously, of course, where he got that word from. It certainly wasn't for his book or YouTube, because he's banned at the moment from using YouTube. How terrible. I'm talking about souls, but I'm banning his internet.
Well,
but that's another pod for another day.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So ignoranus, it came apparently from a teacher in his school I'm very friendly with.
Yeah.
Apparently that's what you'd be if you didn't do your homework. So I might have to touch him up on that a little bit. Of course, it's slang, vulgar, derogatory, a person who's both stupid and rude, an ignorant, A-S-S-H-O-L-E is an ignoranus, someone who doesn't do his homework.
Okay. I thought it was a portmanteau, like of ignorant and anus. So ignoramus would be the other
one. Ignoramus is the other one, which means Anglo-French. So, apparently, we do not know.
Yeah.
It's actually a legal term that was a grand jury would write on a bill when it considered the prosecution's evidence insufficient. Huh, they go ignoramus.
Yeah.
Yeah, that we just do not know enough.
Yeah. Huh. But ignoranus. You shouldn't ignore your anus.
And where did the planet of Uranus come from as well?
Yeah.
Because it really isn't Uranus.
No. Yeah. Uranus, but all right.
Anyway, ignoranus, there you go. And ignoramus, I think in life we could say that a lot. We just do not know. So next time someone asks you for your thoughts on something and you don't feel you have all of the evidence necessary, you can just say ignoramus.
So it's an asshole you ignore. Right.
Right, well, on that note, give us your teacher's tip. A recipe for success
if you want to compete. All right, so...
you really are an ignoranus.
Please ignore me.
There you go. Wonderful. So, right. What a lovely word.
So, as a teacher and a parent, I think it's very important that we take responsibility for our kids. So... And for teaching our kids, there has been a movement, especially from the 90s forward, that, you know, the teachers are responsible for teaching the kids and parents are all hands off.
Yeah, but, that's
yeah, if you are a teacher, you have probably noticed this. You've probably noticed how difficult it has become to talk to kids about certain things because, like it or lump it, the kids... Our children learn from us. They learn from us no matter what. They copy us. They copy our attitudes toward things. Mm. They copy our words.
By the way, I have not called anyone in my household an ignoranus.
I think there needs to be more responsibility taken on the part of parents, and this is coming from a parent, for our child's learning or our children's learning. So,
which isn't, get your homework done tonight. It's not about being a homework monitor, is it?
Oh, certainly not. No. I would say something... There's two parts. So look at what you are doing and what you're saying, your attitude towards things in your household. But more than anything, the easiest thing that you can do to become a teacher and a good teacher for your children is to read to them every night. Try and set aside 20 or so minutes of reading every night. Try to make it so that your child sees you reading in the home. Books or Kindle, I don't really care. I think that books probably have a little bit more appeal to children. Try not to make it an iPad or a monitor of any sort. Stick to books if you can. This also leads to going to the library if you have a library in your area. It leads to things like maybe buying more books, swapping books with your friends, things like that. So 20 minutes of reading per night, and that's a huge amount of reading throughout the year for such a low cost. And it really, there's a marked difference between the children who are read to frequently and the children who are not.
Right. And Will, also, I think if there was, we looked at, scrutinized it scientifically, I think it's not just the reading. I think it's actually the parent being with the child.
Well, yeah.
As well, which is catalyzes it. I read to my boys every night. But here's the thing I have to say from a parent's side. Yeah. Sometimes when we come home after a long day's work.
Yes.
And you've got to do the dinner and you've got to change the baby's nappy and then you've got to do the bath time. You've got to wash the hair. Then you've got to clean the teeth and you've got to get their school stuff ready for the next day.
Yeah.
And then you need to sit down on your bed, in the bed, and read a book It's hard.
Yes.
What do you say to that? Well, you can take turns, of course, if you
you've got turns.
The mum and the dad's in the house.
Especially if you've grown up in the city in an apartment. If you live in an apartment at the moment, there are probably a lot of chores around the apartment that your child can do. Picking up shoes, packing their school bags, tidying their own room. I mean, it's just so easy for us to lose our temper and do it for them. And that's a huge mistake.
Mm.
That is such a huge mistake. That teaches kids so much all in one bundle. Like if you yell at somebody and then do it for them, it teaches them that they're useless.
Yeah.
It teaches them that somebody's going to wipe their ass for them sometime. Like it's just, and I do this often and I have to catch myself.
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely, mate.
Giving your child things to do around the house. Make that sure so that they get ready for school tomorrow. You don't have to be the hard nose about it either. You can say, hey, look, you know, if you don't get ready for school tomorrow, your teacher's going to ask you, where's this? Where's that? If you don't, do you want to be in trouble? I don't want you to be in trouble. Get ready for school. You know, things like that frees up time for us to do other things like reading and other things with the children.
Once they start to learn to read, they can read it by themselves and you just coach it along, which is wonderful. I did Cat in the Hat yesterday with Dr. Seuss book,
which
is wonderful for my three-year-old because he gets the, you know, the sat, hat, rat.
Right.
So they just start to learn how to change that consonant, which is really great for those types of words and sight words. Will, we've gone overboard, which doesn't normally happen to us. You are an ignoramus. Okay, let's get back to finish. You've got to call me one before this pod ends. Let's get back into the answer to the riddle of the day.
May the smile be with you.
Thank you.
Riddle of the day, then. How can a man or woman go 8 days without sleep, Mr. Lamont? Tell me now.
Okay, my thought is about how we're defining the 8 days. So if somebody is in an airplane constantly flying around the world counter to the direction of the turn of the world, then you could quite possibly travel like 2 or 3 days before you had to land again and not sleep. Right?
You really are an ignoramus.
Right.
That's free now. That's wonderful. I never would have thought of that. That's brilliant. Okay, the reason a man or a woman can go 8 days without sleep is that he and she can only sleep at night. And on that note, we'll speak to you soon. This is China Jedi.
Sigh.
If you enjoy listening to the China Jedi podcast and want to get involved, either by asking a question, expressing your opinion, good or bad, light or dark, or even appearing as a special guest, then get in touch by emailing our team at info@chinajedi.com. That's info@chinajedi.com.
May the smile be with you.